Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, celebrating 70 years of service to financial advisors, their clients, and institutions worldwide. Details at putnam.com. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Wow, pretty busy for a Friday in August, huh? There was news about everything from the credit crunch to the foreign exchange markets. Fannie Mae lost billions last quarter, and oil dropped to $115 a barrel. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Gather.com, where friends keep up with the people, conversations, and moments that matter most. People are talking about business at Gather.com.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Friday, the 8th of August. Great to have you with us. And today was Fannie Mae's turn for the quarterly corporate ritual known as the earnings report. Usually what happens is that the CEO gets on the conference call with Wall Street analysts. He or she then says a few things that are basically boilerplate, no matter how bad the numbers. Fannie Mae CEO Daniel Mudd departed from that script this morning. During the call, he announced a $2.3 billion loss for the quarter that ended in June.
In the market, the conditions which many of us had already described as the worst in a generation took a turn for more worse after the quarter ended.
It helps to remember here that the big crisis over Fannie and its cousin Freddie Mac happened on the first couple of weeks of July. So with that as a backdrop, some are wondering what's next for the housing market and for the American economy. Marketplace's Steve Henn reports.
Fannie Mae has lost almost $10 billion in just 1 year. That's put a huge strain on the company's balance sheet. Thomas Lawler is a mortgage industry analyst and a former Fannie Mae executive.
They are going to have to be incredibly judicious in the use of capital and conserving capital.
Basically, the company doesn't have a lot of cash left. Together, Fannie Mae and its twin, Freddie Mac, insure $5 trillion in mortgages. Both have more than $800 billion in assets, but almost that much in liabilities. The Congressional Budget Office estimates a bailout could cost U.S. taxpayers $25 billion. But
$25 billion is peanuts, given the scale of these firms.
William Poole is the past president of the St. Louis Fed. He believes a bailout's likely, and he says putting both firms on solid financial footing would cost a fortune.
We're talking in round numbers of 50, 70, even 100 billion each.
Instead, Poole would like to see the government take over Fannie and Freddie and dismantle their businesses before the situation gets worse. But in the meantime, Lawler says American consumers are feeling the effects.
Already we're seeing mortgage rates that are higher than otherwise, and it is simply a lot harder to get a mortgage.
And it's not going to get any easier. Fannie Mae said today it would stop buying low documentation loans. These are the so-called liar loans that got them into trouble in the first place. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
There's nothing like the threat of a potentially embarrassing, dragged-out legal battle to focus the mind. The minds in question today are those of the people running Wall Street's big banks and brokerages. More than a dozen of them are in the crosshairs of federal and state authorities over their sales of something called auction-rate securities. Those bonds have become virtually impossible to sell on the open market. Yesterday, we told you Citigroup is going to buy back more than $7 billion worth of them from its customers. Merrill Lynch followed quickly with a promise to buy back $10 billion. Today, there's word UBS is going to buy back $19 billion worth. But with billions of losses already on the books, it's a fair question to ask whether they can really afford to do that. Marketplace's Bob Moon reports maybe they can't afford not to.
It's not like they're throwing tens of billions of dollars down a rat hole, Duke University securities law professor James Cox says. These banks are essentially offering to buy the frozen bonds back until they thaw out.
They do have value. They just are not as liquid as everybody thought they were going to be. And if you hold them to maturity, you'll reap most of that value.
Cox says the massive buyback will be painful in the short term, but these struggling banks wouldn't be so eager to do it if it wasn't in their own best interests.
There may be a silver lining here that the bank's willingness to put this dimension of their problem behind them may indicate some optimism on their part that they're starting to see bottom.
But the banks may still need time to come up with the money. Tom Ajami is a securities lawyer in Houston. He says even though these bonds were sold as being as good as cash, the banks won't cash them in right away.
What's really sad is that they can't even redeem the money or refund the money right now. They're on schedules of trying to do it by the end of 2009, and in one case, they're trying to do it by the end of 2010. which in some ways is just very unacceptable. If you go deposit your money someplace, you ought to be able to get it back when you want it back, not when the bank tells you they think they can give it back to you.
In the end, Boston University professor Tamar Frankel says these settlements may be a bargain for the banks to save their reputations with customers.
Their life depends upon it. The most expensive way is to lose the trust, because then they won't exist anymore.
She says what Wall Street desperately needs to buy back is the confidence of its investors. I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
Airline stocks got a shot in the arm today from falling oil prices, but the companies behind those shares need more than a momentary boost. High labor costs and high fuel prices have U.S. Airways charging for drinks, even water. JetBlue is charging for pillows. This week, American Airlines announced it's tacking fees onto frequent flyer miles. If you've tried to redeem those free miles lately, you know there's no such thing as a free trip. But the whole idea behind frequent flyer programs was to build customer loyalty. So how long can the fees continue before the loyalty starts to disappear? Marketplace's Elisa Roth reports.
Herb Keel is one of those customers airlines should be bending over backwards to woo.
Last year, I was out of town 44 weeks.
Keel's carrier of choice is Northwest, even if they cost a little more, because he can usually get a direct flight, and he likes the frequent flyer miles, which he mostly uses for upgrades. Keel says so far he hasn't had any trouble redeeming miles, but Michael Boyd says putting any restrictions on frequent flyers is a dumb idea. He's an airline consultant in Colorado.
Frequent flyer customers are your most loyal. If you tell them, like one airline's done, oh, if you're a gold exalted titanium level frequent flyer, you don't get any bonus miles if you fly with us. It's almost like airlines are so panicked over fuel prices, they're turning on the customer.
Who's already more interested in getting a bargain than in brand loyalty. He says changes to frequent flyer programs are typical of other changes in the industry.
Overall, we're looking at a situation where it's take away and charge for it rather than give people more.
He says don't count on any big payouts from the airlines to make up for your lost miles or new ways to use the ones you've already got stashed away. But then Herb Keel points out the airlines are in a pretty good position when it comes to people like himself, who really do have to get from point A to point B.
You know, I think it's getting less and less attractive to fly, but if I'm going from Minneapolis to Los Angeles, the chances of me taking the bus are pretty slim.
Well, Greyhound does have a frequent riders program in New York. I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
Those traders are pretty smart. You don't have to tell them twice. Dollars up, oil's down, everybody starts buying. We'll have the details and to chat with a man in Dallas when we do the numbers. A lot of people are trying to be better about what they eat. Less red meat, more fruits and vegetables, and more of anything labeled organic. The research firm Mintel says organic food sales are expected to hit nearly $5 billion this year. But the industry itself isn't completely healthy, in part because some consumers are pushing their carts away from the more expensive natural and organic brand names. Safeway is betting on that. The grocery chain is going to put its own organic label on competitor shelves. Marketplace's Renita Jablonski has more.
What better place to get a sense of the types of organic foods people are buying than the Marketplace refrigerator? There's organic peanut butter. Here's some organic yogurt, organic soup. You often see a big O in here. O Organics is the name of Safeway's house brand. It's also sold in Vons and Pavilion supermarkets. But shoppers may soon be seeing it in other stores, too.
We're making it available to everybody.
That's Shetal Khanna, Safeway's Director of Marketing for Global Brands. She says Safeway is offering the O Organics product line to competing grocery chains nationwide.
We are very, very confident. I mean, if you look at the success that we've gotten on O Organics, I mean, it was already a $300 million brand last year.
This year, it's expected to bring in more than $400 million. Lynn Dornblaser is a new product expert with market research firm Mintel. She says Safeway is making a savvy move at a time when food prices are rising.
That could mean that we'll see consumers who have had to turn away from stores like Whole Foods quite simply because of the price will then have at least a slightly lower cost alternative they can go to.
But consumers can also turn to giants like Walmart, which has its own organic line. Safeway wouldn't say which of its competitors are picking up O-Organics. The rollout is slated to begin this fall. I'm Renita Jablonski for Marketplace.
Tens of thousands of new consumer products hit American store shelves every year. Best estimates are that 90% of them, 90% of them, fail. Within 3 years, they're gone, never to be seen again. A consulting company in Ann Arbor, Michigan, has made a business of collecting many of those products, the failed as well as the good, and companies pay big bucks to get inside and have a peek. From Michigan Radio, Dustin Dwyer reports.
If a new consumer product goes bust, I mean fantastically, spectacularly bust, it might just make it into a special glass cabinet at Arbor Strategy Group Marketing Consultants. Marilyn Raymond works for the group. She reaches into the cabinet and shows me one of her favorite product blunders.
This was a shampoo company that sold this particular product. You could buy either the city people version of the product or the country people version of the product.
Now, it's possible people who live in cities would have different shampoo needs than people in the country. City people might get soot in their hair, country people might get dust. But as Raymond points out, people who lived in the suburbs weren't sure which shampoo to buy. And store owners stocking shelves were even more confused. They couldn't buy a case of just city people or country people shampoo. The manufacturer only shipped cases with an equal number of each.
So Rite Aid, sitting there in downtown Manhattan, was stuck with half a case of country people. You wonder who was thinking and how they were thinking and what, you know, and what was the sort of thinking behind it.
You could wonder that about a lot of the products here. There's the TV dinner Wine and Dine, complete with a small bottle of wine for cooking, not sipping. Or how about Harwell's cranberry mayonnaise? Not your thing? What about Harwell's pineapple mayonnaise? The collection started 30 years ago when a marketing journalist started setting aside products he wrote about. Arbor Strategy Group bought the collection in 2001 as a teaching tool for marketers and product developers. Today it includes 110,000 items, both failed and successful, from around the world. And it's not cheap to stop by and look at what's here.
Just to walk in the door without any of our services would start at $5,000.
Plenty of companies are willing to pay the price. Raymond says two or three groups come in every week.
Oh, guys, here's the last one.
One of the benefits of being in a place like this is you can see some of the packages that did not work in the marketplace, and you can sit back and analyze and say, well, now, why didn't that one work?
Aaron Brody is a packaging consultant. I found him on a recent Tuesday in the collection's condiment aisle. Brody's been in the business for decades. If you've ever eaten applesauce out of a plastic cup or bought chopped lettuce in a bag, you have Brody to thank. But product development is top secret. Brody wouldn't tell me what he was researching or who he was working for. I met another packaging consultant named Brian Wagner. He wouldn't tell me either, but he says he walks the aisles of the collection about once a month.
The majority of our clients are huge. You know, they're $1 billion plus. There's lessons for all of them.
Those lessons can be complicated, like figuring out the best way to market a new sports drink. Or they can be simple, like don't try to sell country people shampoo in New York City. In Ann Arbor, Michigan, I'm Dustin Dwyer for Marketplace.
Time to check what turned out to be a crazy week on Wall Street. David Johnson is the guy we do that with. Mr. Johnson, what do you have to say for yourself?
I say this is no way to invest.
I mean, right?
Not when you know, you're up 300 points and then you're down 200, then you're up 300. At least the sequence is right. But
That's right. And
I'm looking back, we're up 400 points for the week of the Dow. The NASDAQ was up 100. And oil, what a story on oil. But you know what it all goes back to? You know what it all goes back to?
No, that's why I called you.
Well, I'm glad you called because you've come to the right place, right. The U.S. dollar, the mighty U.S.
dollar.
The
greenback.
Mightier. Yeah. 3 weeks ago, it cost $1.60 to buy a euro.
Oh, that's amazing.
About the time it was, you know, a scotch and water was $25 in Paris. So it cost $1.60 to buy a euro. Today, it cost $1.50. A dime that's staggering. That's an enormous drop.
Yeah. I mean, this is an industry. The foreign exchange markets are a place where decimal points mean bajillions of dollars.
Well, and lots of, I mean, if you think about it, a big currency swing can really make the difference between a profit and a loss.
Mm-hmm.
So you go in and you do everything you can. And what you do when you've got the dollar getting weaker every day is you go in and hedge yourself. You buy gold.
Yeah.
You buy oil because oil's denominated in dollars. Mm-hmm. Maybe you spread out and you go to a little silver, a little platinum, a little palladium. And then all of a sudden the dollar starts getting stronger. Hey, what do y'all need all this stuff for? And you look around today, gold was down $13. Silver was down 92 cents.
Mm-hmm.
Oil was down over five bucks when you consider the after-hours trading.
Right,
and all
of
it really tied back to the dollar.
All right, well, let me ask you the macroeconomic question, though. The growth in the American economy, at least in the most recent quarter, was almost entirely exports, right?
Yeah.
If the dollar starts to get stronger, that's a bad thing for American exports. So what does a stronger dollar mean for the economy when it's already dicey out there?
Well, then you ask yourself, well, so why is the dollar getting stronger? Well, if it's because maybe this economy is going to somehow scrape by and make it after all, then business ought to be doing better. Now, this doesn't bode well for, you know, I don't know, Caterpillar tractors mm-hmm. or Coca-Colas or big international, multinational firms, or at least doesn't bode as well. But, gee, you know, it's a lot better for U.S. manufacturers and retailers. I mean, even Walmart was back up a buck today.
All right, so what does the smart money do now, though? I mean, do you keep on with the commodities? Do you do the dollar? I mean, where do you go?
I don't know where you go. You know, the big question is billions and billions and billions of dollars are coming out of these auction rate securities. These these banks, these brokerage houses are having to buy them back. And so I don't know where you put it. I mean, do you put it in CDs? Nobody trusts banks. You put it in the market? Hey, who trusts the market?
Well, right. They're also shell-shocked, right?
Well, and you know what can happen to gold. You've seen gold fall 15% here in the last few weeks. You just go dig a big hole in your backyard, bury it, and hope nobody sees you doing it.
Because it's Friday in August, and that's what you do. David Johnson down in Dallas, Texas. Thank you, David.
It's 107 out there today. Have a good weekend.
See ya. Coming up, the trials of service with a smile.
I had a woman recently who was reading the menu wrong, and she insisted that I was reading the menu wrong, and she pointedly told me that she wanted me to realize that I was wrong.
But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrial surged 2.75% today, 302 points to close at 11,734. The NASDAQ jumped around 2.5%, 58 points to finish at 2414. The S&P 500 shot up 2.33%, 30 points to end the day at 1296. The markets enjoyed their best week in more than 3 months. Since Monday, the Dow has climbed 3.6%. The NASDAQ rocketed 4.5% higher. The S&P 500 gained 2.9% for the week that was. I mentioned airlines a moment ago. United Airlines soared almost 16%. Continental Airlines jetted almost 12% higher. American Airlines saw a 9% rise. Bond prices were flat, though. The yield on the 10-year T-note stands at 3.93%, and you're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace Entrepreneurship Reporting is supported by Lenovo, official computer partner of the Olympic Games. Lenovo dedicates 1% of income to support entrepreneurship and social ventures worldwide. Whether you're busy or lounging around, the economic gears are always turning. Marketplace is available around the clock, too, as a podcast. Get your financial fix whenever you want it. Download the show and take it with you. Just head over to our website at marketplace.org and click on podcasts.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at what's happening Monday. President Bush attends an exhibition baseball game between the U.S. and China in Beijing. Members of Pakistan's ruling coalition begin impeachment proceedings against President Pervez Musharraf. And on August 11, 1934, the first group of federal prisoners arrived at Alcatraz Island. I'm Kevin Arnovitz.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdahl. As we sit here in early August of 2008, we are plus or minus a year into the credit crunch. You don't have to look too much farther than the news of the day, though, about auction rate securities and Fannie Mae's losses to know the damage isn't done yet. Banks and brokerages are still adding up their losses. The industry feeling perhaps the most pain is private equity. Those are generally closely held investment firms that put their money into companies that aren't publicly traded. Thomson Reuters added it up for us not too long ago. They said private equity firms invested just $50 billion in the U.S. in the first half of this year. The number last year was more than $300 billion. Private equity is a notoriously private business, but Marketplace's Amy Scott got a rare look inside one firm to find out how the industry is adapting.
The Manhattan offices of the Jordan Company look a bit like a bunch of ex-jocks took over a fancy law firm.
This is what we call the dugout. We're very sports-oriented here, and this is where our younger guys all sit. And
Kristen Custer is my tour guide. She says the firm's founder, Jay Jordan, played football at Notre Dame. A motivational sign on the wall reads, "Play like a champion."
This is the bullpen, and this is where a lot of our senior associates sit.
So what happens in the bullpen?
Work gets done.
Hopefully, right?
Custer is in charge of raising money for the company. She gets it from a variety of investors, maybe even you via your pension fund. But thanks to the credit crunch, private equity firms are finding it harder to get that money. In the first half of this year, fundraising fell for the first time in 5 years. That's according to Dow Jones. Custer says her company was lucky. Jordan closed a new $3.6 billion fund in December. Custer says she'd laid most of the groundwork before the market seized up.
You know, I don't want to say it was a cinch for us to raise $3.6 billion because it took a year to do. But I think we hit our target. We, you know, got the money that we wanted, and it wasn't as if we fell short.
Investing that kind of money is also tougher these days. Private equity firms like Jordan buy companies and eventually sell them. Jordan's dabbled in everything from chocolates to bicycle parts. One name you might remember is Carmike Cinemas. But when they buy companies, private equity firms don't put up all the money themselves. They borrow a lot of it. Adam Max is a managing principal at Jordan. He says some of the lenders he used to hear from no longer call.
It is much more challenging. The go-to people that we had a year ago, some of them are not really in business, in our business at least at this point. So financing's available, much more difficult, takes much more time, much more thinking than maybe it did a year ago.
Bankrupt retailer Linens and Things will close fewer stores than originally expected.
The news is littered these days with private equity deals gone bad. In some of those transactions, the firms involved borrowed as much as 70% of the money. Private equity-owned retailer Linens and Things went bankrupt in part because it was saddled with loans. But Max says the Jordan Company has never used that much debt.
We've just been very conservative in how we've structured deals. Part of that is a result of our long history. So the types of businesses that we're in, the amount of leverage we have, we're all done with the thought that the good times weren't going to last forever.
The tough economy creates another problem for private equity. It's a lot harder for the firms to sell companies when they're ready to get out. In the past, private equity firms like to cash out within about 5 years. Max says his firm is comfortable waiting longer, a decade or more in some cases.
We actually refer to ourselves as patient capital. We've seen recessions. We've seen credit contractions. We've positioned our portfolio before this happened in anticipation of what's happening now.
The deal-making is by no means dead. Just a few weeks ago, Jordan bought a marine transportation company for about $500 million. Max says the bad times have one upside. There's less competition for the deals Jordan does want to do. In New York, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Fresh fruit, ice cream, and seafood. Summertime is just a good season for eating. And that brings us to this week's installment of Hot Jobs.
We're having a heat wave.
There's a place out on Cape Cod, Max Seafood it's called, that's been serving up eats to hungry beachgoers since 1995. We stopped by to talk to one of the servers who says the whole place really cooks.
With everything from the kitchen, it gets really hot. It's a lot hotter back there because we have our windows and we get a really nice breeze since we're right on the bay. But it gets pretty hot.
Order number 8.
My name is Anna Hay and I...
Number 9.
work for Max Seafood on the pier in Wellfleet on Cape Cod, Massachusetts.
Order number 10.
Job title. Not really. I guess expediter. But yeah. We have two people who take orders.
So a cup of chowder and a cup of biscuits.
And then I'll either be getting the food from the kitchen or I get it from someone who gets it from the kitchen. And we do soups and drinks here. So we always have clam chowder and lobster bisque. And today our soup special is something that I can't actually say, but it's like a chicken soup. Something really ridiculous, I'm not really sure. Number 11. And then we send out the food to customers. Number 12. So I guess if you wanted to explain the restaurant part, it's definitely a clam shack with more than just shack food.
Julie, your oysters are ready?
These are oysters, Wellfleet oysters. It's what Wellfleet is famous for shellfish. Number 14, my cousins Mac and Alex Hay own Max Seafood, and they started it a long time ago. And then about, 5 years ago, I started coming up here for the summers to work with them. And then I just graduated from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Next year, I'm going to be a 10th grade English teacher at a boarding school in New Jersey.
Number 16.
Yes, going from handing out orders to teaching 10th grade English is definitely a big step, but I like to work here because I enjoy helping family and I like the people that I work with. But we don't always have enjoyable customers.
Order number 35.
I had a woman recently who was reading the menu wrong and she insisted that I was reading the menu wrong and she pointedly told me that she wanted me to realize that I was wrong in my face, that I was wrong, and I had to walk away because I would never be rude to a customer, but there's a point where you cannot be any nicer, so, or nice any longer.
Oh, it's good. Look at that.
We just always remember that the majority of people love their food and really do praise us for what we do. And
oh, man, this is really good. Thank you.
It's fun to be up here. You can't find a more beautiful place than the Cape, so that's a great thing about teaching. I can come back every summer.
Sean Cole helped us out with that piece. We've got pictures of Anna and the crew in action on our website. It's marketplace.org.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, offering more of what you want in a retirement plan. Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
This final note today may be something to make all you casual investors out there feel better the next time you make a bad pick. For as smart as they are, the gang at Google picked a clunker when they plowed $1 billion into America Online 3 years ago. In a filing with the Securities and Exchange Commission last night, Google said it expects the value of its 5% share in AOL may be impaired. Impaired is a word accountants use when they'd rather not say exactly how much less an investment's really worth. AOL's parent company Time Warner said this week it's splitting AOL into two divisions, perhaps a sign that a sale might be imminent. And that is Marketplace from American Public Media on this Friday afternoon. Today, the Dow packed on 302 points, 2 2/3%. The NASDAQ rose 58 points, 2.5%. The S&P 500 gained 30 points. That's 2 1/3%. Our theme music was composed by B.J. Lederman. Marketplace is produced by Celeste Wesson. The executive producer of the program is J.J. Yore. Coming up on Monday, competition heats up in the ice cream world.
I'm not able to maximize my potential as a Mr. Softy when there are copycats around who don't have the overhead that I have.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Have yourself a great weekend.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.